estuve ayudando en la Cruz Roja, entonces yo veía muchas cosas.
When I was working with the Red Cross, I saw many things that were happening in El Salvador. Often, dead people turned up in the highways and in the ditches. They found dead people everywhere. They appeared naked in the streets, with their bodies cut into pieces. The pain one feels to see people in such a situation. It's very hard.
I put myself on the line because I'm a person that believes in God, and I believe that I need to be faithful to God. And then I also put my life on the line because there's Maria Elena, and because there's Rosa, and because there's Pedro. I know these people, and I know what they come from. I know what they go back to. I don't have any choice.
The physical necessity of saving her life made Doris flee El Salvador. A moral imperative makes Stacy do all she can to assist Salvadoran refugees like Doris. The war in El Salvador has taken a toll that those who flee this Central American nation cannot forget, and those who help them remain in the United States cannot ignore. Since the war erupted 7 years ago, military forces subsidized by the U.S. government have killed more than 60,000 civilians and uprooted one quarter of the population. About 500,000 Salvadorans have sought refuge in the United States. Although the State Department refuses them asylum, over 300 churches and synagogues have responded to their need and helped the refugees find shelter, food, and work here, despite their illegal status. This effort is called the Sanctuary Movement.
Back in 1981, five churches organized into a covenant of sanctuary. And what we decided was that we were going to give aid and comfort and support to all refugees who flee from Guatemala and El Salvador because they are under threat of death. And even though our government denies that they're under threat of death, we know better about that and that we intend to give them support.
That support takes many forms. This program follows a public caravan which brought 22 Salvadoran refugees from Los Angeles to the San Francisco Bay Area. An organizer of this sanctuary caravan, Presbyterian Minister Robert McKenzie, speaks in one of the participating churches.
I'm here to mention the fact that two of your people are going to be going on a caravan next weekend from Los Angeles to the Bay Area to bring refugees from Guatemala and El Salvador who are fleeing those countries for their lives to be in sanctuary among churches here in the Bay Area. And Nancy will be going with us on that sanctuary trip and to be a part of this great witness for Christ in the midst of a world of terror and death. Thank you very much.
Nancy, will you please come and use the microphone?
Can you hear me okay? As many of you know, our church session decided to make this church a sanctuary church about a year ago. And we're going to do some of that sanctuary work now that we're bringing some refugees up. Our session has agreed to sponsor a refugee. What that sponsorship entails is finding them a place to live, helping them to find a job and food until they are self-sufficient, teaching them English, helping them to get accustomed to our culture. Anyway, I'm asking you now to help in any way that you can. If you have any contacts for housing, and just to help in any way that you can when they arrive and get to know them. We'll be having them at church and at programs so that you can get to know them and hear their story.
The stories the Salvadorans have to tell are of flight from a war in which non-combatants are military targets. A war characterized by the bombing of villages and by the abduction, torture, and assassination of unarmed individuals.
To the government, all the young people are guerrillas, whether they are or not, especially the men. A young man risks disappearing from one moment to the next because someone says he is a guerrilla.
I was working at the university. I was teaching English as a second language. I usually called the roll every single day to see who were absent and present. And there was a guy who was missing from Monday. And one of my students told me, I think he was captured last night. I didn't pay too much attention because that was a happening of every day. Next day I called again his name. He was not there. When Thursday came, I was calling his name when I heard the knocking on the door of the classroom. And there were two guys over there. They were the soldiers dressed in civilian clothes. Very polite to me, and they came, "Teacher, we bring you the student you're missing." And they gave the order, and two other guys came from a hidden place with a big sack, swinging the sack, and they threw the cadaver which was inside the sack, and that was my student.
The death squads are famous for the murders they commit in the towns and cities of El Salvador. But military operations in the countryside do much more of the killing, using the bombers, helicopter gunships, machine guns, and other weapons bought with $2.3 billion in U.S. aid since 1979. Last year alone, the Salvadoran government conducted more than 1,600 air and land attacks in heavily populated rural areas.
Llegué a estudiar pues enfermería, saqué mi título y bueno.
After I got my nursing degree, I went to work for 1 year in the province of Chalatenango. When the wounded arrived in the health center where I was working, I noticed that the people had no weapons and were not prepared to fight. The only testimony they would give was that the army had arrived and had killed people and left, and that was all. They were peasants. They worked in the fields in Chalatenango.
Ellos eran campesinos que trabajaban en los campos ahí en Chalatenango, en ciertos cantones, y tal vez ahí acababan de llegar los guerrilleros.
Perhaps the guerrillas had passed by. When the soldiers heard that guerrillas had been there, they would come and kill any peasants that they saw. The guerrillas were not there anymore. They had left. But the ones who suffered were the peasants who were working there, who were not armed, who were not guilty of anything. But because they were peasants, wearing their sombreros, dirty and poorly dressed, the soldiers killed them right there.
The sanctuary movement provides aid to refugees from El Salvador and also publicizes their situation, despite the danger of arrest for the Salvadorans and the church workers. They make their actions public in order to expose and change U.S. government policy, which on the one hand supports a war of terror, and on the other denies asylum to 97% of the Salvadorans who apply for legal recognition as refugees. Before leaving for Northern California, participants in the caravan hold a meeting in a Los Angeles church.
Y que Dios esté con ustedes en este viaje. Que Dios les proteja. En nombre del Padre y del Hijo y del Espíritu Santo. Amén.
On behalf of the 23 Southern California Sanctuary Churches, we would like to welcome our Northern California compañeros.
The size of this group is totally heartening. I don't know how many, just a straw vote, how many people here are now going to be driving cars? That's marvelous. We're going to make it. Give ourselves a hand.
I believe people should go, if people are going to drive, if people are going to go in the car, they should be prepared to get arrested. It should not be a surprise to get arrested, although we don't think you will. And I that's important psychologically more than anything else, I think, to begin to face the consequences of an arrest. What does that mean? And the penalty is 5 years in prison, $5,000, conspiracy to two or more people getting together to discuss a, quote, unlawful, unquote, purpose. That's another 5 years and $10,000.
People really need to try to visualize arrest. Visualize them handcuffing the refugee and leading the refugee away, and you don't know what's going to happen to the refugee. All your natural human instincts to protect that person are going to flare up that moment.
In the church parking lot, the refugees meet the people who will accompany them on the trip north.
Francis. Mucho gusto. Mi nombre es Francis.
Francis. Ana Cristina Interiano.
Mi iglesia es Marin Fellowship of
Unitarians. No hablo muy bien español.
Muchas gracias. What I'm wondering is this. Have all of these refugees been given information about, like, if we're stopped by immigration, the fact that they don't have to say anything? Have they been told that?
Pues no dar mi nombre, no decir.
Don't give your name or tell where you're from. Don't say.
No decir nada.
Nada. Hasta que llegue el abogado. Yo sé que es peligroso porque yo he trabajado allá en el Comité de Madres, allá en El Salvador. Yo sé que
I know it's dangerous because I worked in a mother's organization in El Salvador. I know that if I'm deported, I will be assassinated in El Salvador. But we must risk it. If you don't, you don't win or lose. Because only through our testimony will the American public know the suffering of the Salvadoran people. Mr. Reagan won't admit that he is sending napalm bombs, Agent Orange, and planes to kill our people. And what our people need is food, medicine, and clothes, doctors, because we don't have any. They are killing them like they've killed so many priests. I have a dead son also. He was in the Union. I am a woman who cannot read or write. But the pain of losing our children has brought us to this struggle.
So we're about to take off now.
Yeah, let's get rolling.
The caravan begins its 400-mile journey.
We were in a caravan of 19 cars.
19 cars.
Every car had a sign on the side that said Central American Refugees. We all had American flags on our antenna.
Obviously, people were seeing us, you know. We would see people lean over and look at the sign, and some of them would show support for us, and a couple people didn't.
You could see them, you know, they'd glance over, and the wife would look over at the husband, and, you know, they'd kind of chitter-chatter. You knew they were talking about us.
And I just thought a lot about how, you know, even if it means nothing to them, even if they read Central American Refugees, what sanctuary, what does that mean? The next time they see it, they'll think, oh, yeah, you know, I've seen something about that before. So.
We felt like no matter what came of this, we were planting seeds.
The caravan stopped for a press conference in Fresno and for church receptions in both San Jose and Palo Alto. And then it arrived in Berkeley.
Bienvenidos!
400 people at St. Joseph of the Workman Church greeted the caravan participants, who included Bob McKenzie and Marilyn Chilcote, both Presbyterian ministers.
She wants them in there? In the chapel? Can you sort of lead them in there?
Bienvenido, you can stay bien. Me alegro.
They would like the refugees in the chapel, please.
Okay, North Americans with your refugees escorting them in. Can you lay claim to your mano a mano?
Four people drove 23 cars yesterday and this morning in defiance of a nation whose stated ideals we cherish. And today, over 400 people, I guess, at least 400 people, gather here to worship God, trusting in God's power to overcome evil, trusting in God's promises and the hope of God's kingdom. We gather here today together to raise our voices and commit our time to protest.
For the Salvadorans, this caravan is but one stage of their journey into exile. Ahead of them waits a new life in an unfamiliar country. Behind them lies the ordeal of coming here.
There was a list circulating in the university, also at the national high school, and the list was made up of 40 names. All of us were teachers of Andes, members of Andes, and The list was already number 9. The first 9 names were already dead. They were following a very strict order. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. And when I saw the list, I saw that I was number 19th in the list. They made it in order to make the people run. Because when you see your name in a death list, well, what will you do? You have to do something.
De México a Estados Unidos fue una lucha completa, porque yo entré ilegalmente.
From Mexico to the United States was a complete struggle because I entered illegally. We found a guide, a coyote. There are many places where they say one can cross through the desert. Some are places called Las Alcantarillas. These are big pipes under the ground where water crosses from the United States to Mexico. We walked for almost 4 hours. It was dark, with water up to here, dirty water. When we began, we were bending down. But there were places where we had to crawl on the ground because it was a very narrow place. And at a certain time, they let the water through. We could have drowned. We had to hurry and try to get through in time. Whoever stayed behind just wouldn't make it. It was very difficult. The first days, the first 2 weeks, I had nightmares. Many nightmares. That I was in my country, and that the guardia was following me. That all the doors were closed. I was desperate. I felt that I was going to die.
It was the 4th of July. When I came here, it was about 11 at night. Then I heard the rockets, fireworks. Every time I heard one of those, I was shaking, because that made me feel as if I was back there in El Salvador, listening to the bombardments over there.
Getting used to a modern city far from one's homeland is stressful for almost anyone. What urban natives take for granted can give newcomers culture shock. And for those who did not come by choice, it's hardest of all.
I don't know how to say it in any other language. Right side, I need money tickets.
Sometimes I can't understand the signs. Some people speak to me in English and I don't understand them.
The strangest thing for me was that I couldn't get used to the buses and the streets. I thought I'd never get to know the city. In the big city, everything seems strange. I was afraid to go out. I didn't want to go out. I didn't go out. I didn't talk to anybody. I felt very bad.
Exiles from El Salvador typically reach this country without papers or possessions, bringing nothing but the clothes they wear. Their poverty and illegal status make it difficult for them to find housing and employment.
Here there are various obstacles. One of them is discrimination. When you don't know the country and the language, and when you don't speak English perfectly, they say you don't know anything. The need for money and the lack of work, finding an apartment because they ask for first and last month's rent and a deposit, that could mean $1,000. Who can get that together?
Hace tres meses nosotros no podíamos encontrar dónde vivir.
3 months ago, we couldn't find a place to live because they didn't want children. Too many children, they said. Also, we couldn't pay $500 for an apartment. That's too much money. Finally, we found an apartment with a family, and we had to live in one room. 5 people in one room.
I started looking for a job, and that was a great disappointment, because the first thing they asked you is, do you have your social security number? Do you have a green card? And I didn't have anything.
Sometimes sanctuary workers are able to find jobs for undocumented refugees. Nancy, who brought Mauricio north in the caravan, helps him find work.
Hi, Mauricio. Come on in. Apparently our minister knows this man somehow and saw him yesterday for lunch. And the guy said that he needed construction people. So Larry said, aha, I have someone who needs a job. And he has hired Salvadorians before. And in fact, he said to just give any old social security number because he's dealt with that before. It's real good. So, Mauricio, let's go see the man. Mauricio's only been in the country for 1 month, and his English is not so good, but he does understand simple things.
Okay.
And sign language.
All right. Well, as long as he's willing to work, that's the main thing.
Uh-huh.
It's like this one fellow Arnaldo out here.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, he was. Well, he was the second guy that came. And the third guy was Jose, the fellow out there in a hat. He's only going to be here for, I think, another week and a half or so, and then he's going back.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Whereas, like, Arnaldo was telling me yesterday, he can't go back.
Yeah, right. You know? Same with Mauricio.
Really?
Yeah.
You know, he said he'd get shot if he went back.
Yeah.
It's hard to imagine that.
Yeah. Your church is considering doing sanctuary, too.
Right, yeah. Well, there, it got really hung up in the whole political thing. Most everybody is more than willing to, you know, share bread and help with a job and, you know, help the brother man when they're here, but... Okay. You know, it got so hung up in making a political statement, you know, for or against Reagan and the U.S. government. And
it's just in the last few months that it's gotten a little more political because people are thinking, you know, there's more people coming in. We want to stop this. And in order to stop this, we got to do something else.
Yeah, I don't. I just have to have a Social Security number to give the guy a paycheck is all. So
we'll take this home then and fill it out at home.
Yeah, okay.
Officials of the Immigration and Naturalization Service say that Salvadorans are coming to the United States only to find jobs and deny that they are fleeing the war. David Ilkert is the director of immigration in Northern California.
They're here because of economic... I'm convinced that most El Salvadorians are here for economic reasons, period. They're basic ground in most instances. There's a war going on down there. People are being killed. They can't find jobs. And they say for economic reasons, they just don't want to live in El Salvador or they can't make a living.
However, Jorge says that he left his country fearing for his life, and he fears that he will be deported back to El Salvador.
I imagined in a certain way that if the immigration authorities saw me, they would kill me, the way it happens in my country. Because if after 6 p.m. you're outside in the street, they shoot at you to kill. One carries that in one's mind. One carries a very strong tension. In a way, it's true because if I'm deported, I would be dead upon arrival in El Salvador.
Granted, many people in their own mind from El Salvador, right, are firmly convinced, have no doubt, right, that if they went back to El Salvador, they would be persecuted, possibly killed, because they've said, well, I've had a distant relative that was killed. And the government's going to make some connection by some vague reasoning that I'm next on the hit list, okay? Some people that can walk down the street, right, and believe everybody's looking at them. Some people are paranoid.
Jorge's fear is based on his experience in El Salvador.
Entrando al pueblo, íbamos como a dos metros de mi casa. Cuando bien raro vino.
When I was about 2 meters away from my house, it seemed strange. There was a group of people inside my house. I got scared and I asked myself, what must have happened? As I got closer, I saw black ribbons. Someone had died. I felt very tense because I didn't know what was happening.
Encontré los cadáveres de dos niños, un varón y una hembra.
When I entered, I found the cadavers of two children, a boy and a girl, whose parents had just arrived from the United States. They had been here in the United States illegally, like we are now. Then they were deported to El Salvador. And after 2 months, the Guardia arrived in jeeps, well-armed, and broke the door down and shot whoever was there, and they killed the children.
Solamente rompieron la puerta y dispararon a quien estuviera ahí. Y mataron a los niños.
Later, it was said that they were the death squads. There's been many cases, a great number of Salvadorians who come here and are deported. And 2 months later, they are found headless or in pieces on the roads.
Mm-hmm. Sanctuary workers take the risk of going to jail to protect Salvadorans from a worse fate. Gus Schultz, a Lutheran minister.
I don't have any great burning desire to be going out and doing things that that could get me arrested. That just doesn't happen to be one of the things I really like to do. But I think it's something that if one really takes seriously the needs of people and the kind of commitments that one is called upon to make by one's faith, and in my case this would be the Christian faith, and what I perceive to be the imperatives that are embodied in the gospel, that doesn't leave you much of an alternative.
No one on this caravan was arrested. But recently in Tucson, Arizona, 8 members of the sanctuary movement, including a Protestant minister, a nun, and 2 priests, were convicted on charges of conspiring to transport and shelter illegal aliens. Testimony against them came from FBI informers who had infiltrated their churches.
I'm sure that some of the arrests and the trials that are taking place are efforts to try and intimidate people who are doing that kind of work. And it's actually having just the opposite effect. It's bringing more people to it, and it's causing the movement to grow.
Besides the hundreds of churches that provide sanctuary to Central Americans, the state of New Mexico and 15 cities, including New York, Los Angeles, and San Francisco, have symbolically become sanctuaries through the proclamation of elected officials. Salvadoran refugees may appreciate the support North Americans have given them, but that does not change the fact that they are in exile and outside the law, unable to survive in their own country and unwanted in this one.
This country is pretty, really. There's no denying it. But I don't belong in this society. My society is there. My country is there. One can compare it to a bird that has been flying in the air a long time. A hunter would cut its wings and put it in a cage. In a certain way, that happened to me.
It is easy to ignore an invisible people, who, if they appear in public, may be deported and disappear among the faceless corpses in El Salvador. It takes courage to challenge the State Department's refusal to grant them asylum, and even more courage to risk arrest by offering sanctuary to a troubled stranger. And yet the sanctuary caravan is but one of many actions through which people of this land of liberty show human solidarity with refugees from the war in El Salvador. Sanctuary Caravan is a Fine Line production. Claire Schoen, producer. Jim Watson, associate producer. Written by Steve Most. Mixed at Focused Productions by Jeff Roth. Production assistance by Lisa Ginsburg. Voiceovers by Vilma Vitanza, Monica Palacios, Herbert Seguenza, Rodrigo Reyes, Maria Alcorcha, Karin Didi Rodriguez, and Madeline Flamate. I'm Brenda Berlin. Special thanks to those interviewed, especially the refugees, whose names have been changed or withheld to protect their identities. Latino series producer, Jose McMurray. Executive producer, Frank Tavares. Funds for this program were provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting and the NPR member stations. This is NPR, National Public Radio.